Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Hi, I'm Jen White, and this is The Morning Shift. Damon Young is the co-founder of VerySmartBrothers.com, where he writes about race and culture. Young has a new book out, What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. It's a collection of funny, heartbreaking, and observant essays on what it means to be a black man in America. Now, to put all those disparate elements in a single book, a writer has to put themselves in a particular kind of headspace. But Young says it was just about being true to himself.
I just wanted to write something that was authentically me. And for a book to be authentically me, it had to be funny and also cringeworthy and also very vulnerable and transparent and injected with passages and even chapters that would make people think, I can't believe you're admitting this on paper. I can't believe you're saying this. So, I mean, if I was going to write a memoir, then I had to go there.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you explore in this book is how you and the people around you defined blackness, especially when you were young, when you were a teenager. There was this interesting dynamic about defining blackness in proximity to the hood, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, are you hood adjacent? Are you in the hood? And that helped shape how you thought about it. Break that down for us a little bit.
Well, the chapter you're referencing, Street Cred, you know, just deals with my experience growing up in a hood, but then going to a suburban high school and encountering kids who pretended like they were from the hood at the suburban high school. And so just a juxtaposition there, and I don't know, just some of the social situations mm-hmm. and misadventures I found myself in with that situation. And that chapter and many of the other chapters in the book just really dive into the concept of performance and how essential performance is to masculinity. Attempting to be a thing that you know that you're not, but attempting to be that thing and pretending that you are this thing because you believe that that's what's expected of you. You believe that the performance is safer than the reality. The reality is that we all have self-consciousnesses. We all have anxieties. We all have angst. We all, you know, have things that we do, that we believe, that we've experienced that are deeply unflattering. And that's where humanity is. But it could be safer to perform, to pretend like those things just aren't a part of you, aren't a part of your experience, and to create this entire facade of like this, you know, and speaking of, you know, men, black men in particular, like this hyper hetero, almost like the cipher, where instead of being who you actually are, you are this combination of, okay, I have Billy Dee's cool. I have Denzel single tear from Glory. I have Tracy McGrady swag after he, you know, makes a jump shot and runs back down court. And just combining all of this together, you know, I have Ice Cube's hood sensibility. And if you don't have any of those things, and most of us don't, there still is a pressure, a compulsion to pretend like you do. And, you know, I included this stuff in a book and I write about it and I tell some of these stories about myself just to expose just the fallacy of that performance. And hopefully, you know, people who read this, particularly young people who read this, get to a place where they just recognize like, you know, I don't have to do that. I could just be myself.
At what point were you conscious enough of that performance to shed it?
Yesterday. Yesterday. I mean, it's an ongoing. I mean, I'm writing about it. I'm thinking about it. I'm, you know, I have a family now, so it's vital that I am as self-aware as I can possibly be, as honest with myself and, you know, with my wife. But it's hard to let go of those performances, and I think I've done a good job so far, but I'm not done because it's so ingrained. And you know, if I interrogate myself a little bit more, you know, I have to admit that I may even have investments in it.
Explain that.
And investments in projecting a certain image and allowing that image to exist in place of me. Sometimes. Not all the times, but sometimes.
You spend a lot of time in the book examining where blackness and masculinity intersect, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out what masculinity means for you in particular. What did you discover about that as you were writing?
I discovered that I was a bit harder on myself as a kid than I needed to be. For context, I was a star athlete in high school. I went to college on a basketball scholarship. There's a certain expectation of who you're supposed to be if you are like a black male star athlete, particularly in a sport like football or basketball, a sport that people actually care about. And again, I've always had like this anxiety. I've always been introverted. I've always, you know, had these really silly neuroses that converge. And I felt that my experience was singular. You know, I would look at my peers. I would look at, you know, the other people on my basketball teams, my friends, and I didn't see them experiencing the same things, or they didn't seem to be experiencing the same things I did. But again, looking back now as a 40-year-old at like that 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old me, you recognize that, oh, they're performing too. These things that you believe were singular, this claustrophobia, that was a little unfair. You know, you didn't have to think that way because, again, you know, and it would have been hard for a 16-year-old me to really step back and realize that. But, you know, at 40, it's like, oh, yeah, this was I see it. It's so easy to see. And I even see it. I have an 18-year-old nephew, a 20-year-old brother-in-law, and I see it with them and their friends. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, my goodness, this was me. And I just I didn't give myself the benefit of the doubt enough.
You talked about how revealing this book is. And yeah, you share a lot with us. Mm-hmm. How you met your wife, your parents' struggles financially and otherwise. How challenging is it to decide how much truth to tell?
Was one of the most challenging things about the book. I mean, and it's still challenging because, you know, it's one thing to write and decide what's in the book and decide who you're going to write about and, you know, what stories you're going to tell. But now people are reading it. It's out there.
Yeah, it is.
People are talking about it on radio shows. People are having book clubs. about this stuff. I mean, things are referenced in nationally publicized reviews, and that is, it's still pretty surreal. You know, it's a memoir, so obviously there's going to be people in my life who are involved in it. And with each person, I reached out to them beforehand. I got their permission. And then after I wrote about them, I went back again. It's like, are you okay with what I'm saying? Is there anything you would change, or, you know, did I get anything wrong here? And everyone who I reached out to was fine, and they wanted me to just tell my truth. So they supported me. But even with that support, and particularly with like the passages about my dad, my parents, and my dad who's still here, that was and still is difficult. Like I'm fine with people knowing stuff about me. I'm fine with some of the more unflattering things about me, but, you know, the stuff about my people is, that's a little harder.
While the book is written through the frame of your experiences, it's clear that the women in your life have had an enormous impact on how you think about the world. There's a part of the book I want you to read in the essay, Living While Black Killed My Mom.
I think about how black women are praised for their strength, the way you praise a mule or a swarm of ants or a handshake or a really expensive garbage bag. I think about how Praise of Black Women reads like a word association game where someone displays strength in a thesaurus and found the synonyms. Black women are stout. Black women are unyielding. Black women are stable. Black women are durable. Black women are stalwart. Black women are firm. Black women are poised. Black women are reliable. Black women have grace too. But grace is just another way of praising them for being strong for everyone else while also juggling and then ignoring the urge to firebomb the entire planet.
How did the women, the black women in your life shape this book?
Well, so this chapter about my mom, it's been 6 years since she passed away. And she died in, I guess, October of, it'll be 6 years in October. And she had lung cancer, was diagnosed a year before she passed. And in the years before that, however, she had been experiencing, you know, all this back pain, stomach aches, headaches, you know, things that we recognize as symptoms of the sort of cancer that she had. And, you know, she'd go to the doctor and, you know, she'd get Advil. She'd be told to drink less pop, eat less sugar, get more exercise. And these are all like good things to tell somebody. But I think about my mom and I wonder if her pain, which was like almost sentient, like its own sentient being, would have registered differently with the doctors and whoever she saw if she, you know, if she happened to be a white woman. You know, as I say in the chapter, we have proof that doctors, even today, still believe that black people have like the supernatural tolerance for pain. And so including that chapter about my mom puts a human face on the issues of anxiety, of neuroses, of did this happen because I'm black? Did this not happen because I'm black? In those themes that persist throughout the book. It reminds people, you know, one, that my parents were lovely people, but also this is what happens to those lovely people in America.
That's writer Damon Young. His new book is What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. Before we wrap things up, WBEZ wants you to have the coolest, most fabulous summer possible. So we're creating a guide. Sure, there are lots of guides out there in magazines and online, but most of those lists concentrate on things happening downtown and on the north side. Nothing wrong with those events. They'll be included too, but we want to make sure our guide covers the entire city and the suburbs. So you're going to help us put it together with your suggestions. WBEZ digital producer Paula Friedrich explains.
Yeah, so we're doing it Mad Lib style. Okay. So we're doing it fill in the blank style. So we have three prompts that we're hoping people will fill out. And it's stuff like, it's a blank day in Chicago, you should blank at blank. You're feeling blank in Chicago, you should blank at blank. And it's blank in Chicago, you should blank at blank. So yeah, those are these three prompts. And we're hoping to get some really interesting results from that.
Where can people find the form if they want to submit their suggestions?
Yeah, if you just head to wbez.org/summer, you'll find it there.
Have you gotten a lot of responses so far?
Yeah, we've gotten a pretty good response so far. I'm super excited to see all the stuff that people are recommending.
I want to hear what you have for us.
So some of my favorite ones, we've got a couple that are pretty poetic, which I really love. It's golden hour in Chicago. You should stroll with pals at the peaks and valleys of Palmisano Park. I thought that was really lovely. Uh-huh. It's a rainy day in Chicago. You should soak in the photosynthesis at the Garfield Park Conservatory. You're feeling stressed in Chicago. You should take a relaxing walk at the Montrose Beach Bird Sanctuary. You're feeling tired of your near-constant Netflix binge in Chicago. You should go for a walk along the 606, maybe stop for a pizza and nostalgia at the stop along.
So it sounds like a lot of the responses you've gotten have been related to Chicago weather, which totally makes sense. But have people gotten a little more creative?
Yeah, I've been actually surprised. I kind of assumed that a lot of them would be, you know, it's rainy, it's sunny outside, but people have gotten kind of fun with it too. You know, like it's a top-down kind of day in Chicago. You should cruise Longwood Drive from Beverly, Morgan Park to Blue Island. Or it's a go Cubs go kind of day in Chicago. You should grab your friends and take a self-guided brew tour at Ashland and Lake. So people have gotten really fun with it.
Those are great suggestions.
I know, there's a lot of variety. It's good.
Well, Jill Hopkins is still in studio with us. Jill, I'm curious. What? Give her the prompt again, Paula. Yeah.
So it's a blank day in Chicago. Uh-huh. You should blank at blank.
It's an obscenely hot day in Chicago. Uh-huh. You should take advantage of some record stores for their air conditioning and good record smells.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. How long will you be gathering these listener suggestions, Paula?
So we'll have this up until May 8th. And then after that point, we'll kind of cull everything together and bring you something hopefully wonderful.
And once you have all the information pulled together, how will people be able to find it?
They'll be able to find it online. We're still trying to figure out exactly what the format is. That'll kind of depend on what we get. But it'll definitely be on our website.
Well, just remind us one more time for people who want to participate, where can they find the form?
Yep. It's at wbez.org/summer.
That's WBEZ digital producer Paula Friedrich. Paula, thanks.
Thank you.
So yes, definitely get on that Summer Mad Libs train at wbez.org/summer. And please share your suggestions for things to do in and around Chicago directly with The Morning Shift. Our number is 888-915-9945. That's 888-915-9945. We might just use your suggestion on our See, Hear, Eat segment on Thursdays. That's it for today's Morning Shift. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again soon.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.